The Volume.
Jenkins and Jones is brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any other fantasy sport, there's a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win. Welcome to Jenkins and Jones. It's Monday, July 5th. There is a thick layer of fireworks smoke over Southern California right now as we're getting ready for our NBA Finals preview episode. Stick around. We'll be joined in just a couple minutes by Langston Galloway from the Phoenix Suns, who woke up early on his off day to talk about the NBA Finals with us, which was cool and very crazy. As always, the co-hosts of Jenkins and Jones are Dragonfly Jones, a.k.a. Tyler.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
And LeJethro Jenkins, a.k.a. John.
What's up, Bubba? I hate going after Tyler because I'm halfway laughing because his tongue just like...
My tongue get fat as fuck on him.
Fell out onto my fucking keyboard, you know what I mean? And now I got to try to speak looking at this motherfucker, man.
I will tell you that when we're recording too early in the morning, it was Monday morning, John's up early anyway. I woke up early for the podcast. That's when I do Tyler's name first to give us a little extra energy.
There we go.
All right, we've got the matchup for the finals. Is going to be Suns Bucks. Obviously, we're talking about it with Langston in a couple minutes, but I wanted to get your guys's take on, first of all, did we call anything right with the Hawks the entire fucking playoffs? I feel like every single thing we predicted was incorrect.
I don't know if I had them necessarily getting past the Bucks. I think that's when I finally got it right.
I think, but when it was 2-2, I think the podcast was like, the Hawks look good because Trey's going to come back. Giannis is going out. And then they lost the next two.
Chris Middleton. Yeah. Chris Middleton.
He became the LeBron James of Chris Middleton.
I'm low key. I have a take, nigga. Like,
motherfucker. Get it all.
Is this Chris Middleton's team, nigga? Like, no, you know what I mean?
No, we are not going to do that. Absolutely not. No.
Late game. Chris Middleton's the one that steps up. You know what I mean? But no, obviously not. But he's proven himself. Like, any doubts we had about Chris Middleton, it's a wrap. The man has looked great.
The funniest thing to me about Giannis not being American is, and this is a really underappreciated part of his personality, when people ask him these questions, like, Chris Middleton, you know, being the guy in the fourth quarter, his inability to understand why certain things are narratives to the American media is so fucking funny, because he looks at it from a collectivist non-American perspective. That's not like just sucking the dick of the alpha male narrative, like, nonstop. He's just like, I have a great teammate who's playing great in the fourth quarter. Why would I not be excited about this? Like, you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't even get why they're asking him the question.
I was going to say, like, that whole question was the total setup for the whole, if you're not the man late in the game, you're not the man on your team. And Giannis was like, man, I don't give a shit. Get the ball to the hot guy. Let him cook. Like, and everyone's like, you know what I'm saying? Like, the same shit when he said KD was the best player in the world. Like, everyone's like, oh, Giannis has given up. He's rolled over. He went out there and gave KD that work in that game 7.
I don't even know if it's because he's Greek. I just think that's Giannis. I think if Giannis was a John, he'd still be himself. You know what I'm saying? I think Giannis is just an honest dude. He's just like, it seems like his personality, you know what I mean? More than, like, where he's from, you know what I mean? Because I bet there's some other people from, like, that would come in from Greek and be swinging off of somebody's, you know, alpha male narrative. You know,
it's
just what I mean?
But it's a very, like, you have to be the best team. You have to be the best person. It's a very like, no one ever asks a star soccer player in England, like, do you feel threatened by your goalie making a great save? You know what I mean? It's like a uniquely, like, and it's a quarterback, it's a football quarterback driven thing. You know what I mean? That it's like, and we talked about it on the show. Like, that's what has always made KD so fascinating to me, is personality wise. He's just not, I want to be an amazing, I want to be one of the best basketball players in the world. I don't need to be the fucking guy. I don't want to talk to the media. Like, you know what I mean? Like, personalities of actual people don't always line up with the narrative that the media wants for that, you know, especially in the playoffs. That's my feeling about it.
Kevin Durant just wants to be Kevin Durant, and that's good enough. I'm Kevin Durant. You heard of me, haven't you? You know, bro. You know, right? Like, yeah. That's all I gotta be, my nigga.
Kevin Durant.
You see me? You feel me?
Kevin Durant got on Twitter on the 4th of July to say he's deleting tweets because it's part of his brand.
Shit ever. Yo, he is leaned in, and thank God for that. But yeah, I just think, yeah, I don't know. In soccer, if somebody like notoriously was not good in big moments, would they not ask you that question overseas? Because it seems like it's a similar type of, I mean, to a degree, it's fairly similar in that.
Basketball is a unique sport in that it can be so dominated by one person. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's not that uncommon for the top soccer player in the world to not score a goal in a game.
For sure. You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. But in big games, if you're just trash.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you just, you know, you underplaying in big games, big moments. You for know sure. what I mean?
The personality
PKs, you know what I mean? Like, my nigga. Yeah.
The personality thing, the personality thing is sports media, I feel like, across the world, but it's just more of a tabloid celebrity thing in it, like, overseas. Whereas here, okay, it's like you're proving your worth a person. Yeah. You let someone else shoot. I mean, we've seen that with Braun his whole career. You let someone else take the last shot. Yeah. You know, it's just
how dare you earn your $37 million or whatever the fuck, nigga. Like, nigga, I did that, bitch ass nigga.
So what do you guys think about Suns Bucks? Where do you think the series is going? Who are you rooting for?
I mean, it's all about Giannis, right? Like, Giannis tips the scales for me. If Giannis was healthy, I would think that the Bucks, you know, probably take it. I think this is going to go 6 or 7 if we get Giannis at some point in this series. But now, you know, I'm leaning Bucks 6 if we don't get Giannis. I mean, not Bucks 6, Suns 6 if we don't get Giannis.
I'm gonna say, ooh, shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Getting real spicy.
Let me write that down. I think Suns, regardless, even if Giannis was playing, I mean, they you know, I think the Suns, I don't know. There's something about that team, guys. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I truly believe they got it this year. I think they got it this year. Booker's been on the down. Like, he's been, like we talked about, he's been thinking a lot. He hasn't played as well as he did during the year or series earlier. So I think he's going to switch it around this series. I think he might go fucking off on these motherfuckers. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't know, bro. Booker in the finals, not giving a fuck, pulling up with the old school. I think he's going to drag his nuts all over the place. Maybe that's just what I hope he does. You know what I'm saying? But I think the Suns got it. I say
you're talking with your heart. That's your heart.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's more fun that way. You know what I mean?
But I do think Tyler said it literally in the NBA preview test show we did in fucking November or whatever. Like, Chris Paul is making everything as simple as possible for DeAndre Ayton. He's just going out there hooping. He's 17-17 fucking walking on the court.
Right, guaranteed.
And CP3, you know, narrative, whatever, like, he's accounting for the fact that Devin Booker is going to play like it's his first time this late in the playoffs. Like, and Monty Williams, clearly the game plan is not what the Hawks game plan ultimately was, which is like, Trey's going to give us 40 and keep us in it no matter what. Like, very clearly they're planning for Devin Booker having some 9 of 23 nights. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, like, Booker against the, like, when it matters, you know what I mean? Booker has been a fucking animal. You know what I mean? It's like, actually, I wouldn't say that because there were some big moments in certain.
He's had some games where he struggled, but they also haven't had a lot of super high pressure shit because they've been cleaning everybody up.
Yeah, yeah. So. But in the 2-1 game, he wasn't all that, you know, anyway. But I mean, the closeout games in the series prior, he was fucking swinging all over the place. You know what I mean? So. Whatever, but nigga, can we stop talking about basketball now? You got your basketball, you got your niggas. Now we can move on. Let's talk about some other shit, please. God damn. Fuck, and keep this shit in here, man. Let these motherfuckers know how I feel. You feel me? Sha'Carri. Let's talk about that shit.
The NBA Finals are finally here, and FanDuel Sportsbook has a championship offer you don't want to miss, because during the finals, new users get 30-1 odds on either team or team, that's going to be the Suns or the Bucks, to win their next game. That means you can win $150 on a $5 bet. I like the Suns to come out. We obviously, talking to Langston Galloway, we've been enjoying the Suns run through the playoffs, so I think that would be my bet for game one. With FanDuel Sportsbook, there are more ways to win on FanDuel during the NBA Finals. And when you do win, getting your money is a layup. You'll get paid in as little as 24 hours. Just sign up with the promo code J. Again, that's J. To bet the NBA Finals with 30-1 odds. Once again, that's promo code J. To unlock 30-1 odds on either team to win their next game, exclusively on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Disclaimer, 21 and over and present in Colorado, Indiana, or New Jersey. Must wager in designated offer market. $10 first deposit required. $150 max bonus. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado. 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, or 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey. So, you're a sports fan. That's why you're listening. But if you're considering getting in on the fun of sports gambling, I want to let you know about a great resource, the Action Network. The Action Network is where fans go when they're ready to bet smarter and turn a profit betting on sports. In fact, their free Action Network app was recently named the best app in sports betting. With the Action app, you can see the latest picks and articles from Action Network gambling experts, as well as personalities like Colin Cowherd. You can compare odds from different sports books and track every bet you make so you always know how your picks are doing. So, if the game means more to you, download the free Action Network app and start betting smart. All right, our special guest today has got way better things to do than talk to us. He's getting ready for the NBA Finals. He's a member of the Phoenix Suns. Hailing from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, is Langston Galloway. Langston, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Nah, thanks for having me. Appreciate you guys. Let me join you guys today.
So what's life like? We're talking to you early Monday morning. You have a finals game tomorrow night. What's it like, man? You know, I mean, what's it like getting ready for this round and just having the lights come on a little brighter and everything?
From my standpoint, it doesn't seem like we're here yet. Like, until we start playing and we're like, the game is like actually like upon us and like you're getting ready pregame and all that. Like, right now, it just feels like a normal day, like normal Monday, like waking up, getting ready for the kids to get going. But I think tomorrow when I wake up, I know I'll be like amped. I'll be ready to go and knowing, hey, look, this really starts the journey to, hey, winning a championship.
For sure. So Langston, man, how has the ride been? Because you know, you came on board, this is your first season with them. Like, when you signed with Phoenix this offseason, I want you to shoot straight with me. Like, these weren't the 2017 Warriors where you're like, oh yeah, finals definitely, guaranteed. Like, how crazy has this ride been from you signing on board? I mean, I think a lot of us expect the Phoenix to take a leap this season. I had them being like a 5 or 6 seed, you know, maybe getting to the second round, which would have been a great leap, but you guys have a chance to win it all. So how has that ride been?
Yeah, no, from signing on, off season last year, like, I was like, all right, let's just make the playoffs. Like, that's all I was worrying about. Like, hey, look, let me get on a team, make the playoffs. I can get a lot of exposure, be able to, you know, get my rep up, everything up, and then I can kind of like, hey, make my situation go get better for next year. But yeah, who would have thought us making it to the finals? Like, I mean, the team that we have, like, a lot of guys just come together. The chemistry has really been rocking, and I think ever since we beat the Lakers, like, our confidence has been through the roof. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, once you knock off the champs, like, your confidence, just everything, just it feels different. Yeah. And that's just how we feel right now. We feel like, hey, we're going to go out here and win this championship. But at the same time, too, we got to take it one game at a time and take care of, all the small intangible stuff.
Did you know you had a chance at the finals before the Lakers? Or was that the point when it's like, oh, shit, like, we could do this, you know what I mean?
So going into the playoff, well, going into us clinching, I think we all looked at, all right, well, if we can match up with either Portland, Lakers, or Golden State, then you had a play-in game. Mm-hmm. Play-in game happens, you know, it's Lakers versus Golden State. We're going to play one of those two teams. Bang, play the Lakers. So, you know, it's a hesitation because everybody is like, oh, you guys got the Lakers. Like, y'all not going to get past them. Like, you know,
I said that shit 100%.
Everybody wrote us off. Right. Like, man. But I told somebody this. I was like, man, this is going to be the greatest upset in the history of 2 and 7 seasons. Like, we're 2 seed, and we're going to upset the 7 seed. Like, that's literally what it was. And so everybody's like,
that's the way to look at it, you feel me?
It's like everybody was like, man, y'all about to get smashed, like the Lakers, like y'all had a great run. It's like, what? Like, we're a 2 seed, like we're supposed to knock them off, but nobody looked at it like that. And you know, once we won that series, I feel like we got a little respect, but it wasn't like, oh man, like y'all got a chance to win it all. Nah, then we said, all right, we beat them. Mm. Now we gotta play against the MVP. It's like, all right, mm-hmm. now like y'all, I don't know if y'all gonna be able to get past them, man. You know, MVP's playing at a high level, get past them. It's like, all right.
Y'all hooked them. Y'all ain't just getting yeah. past them.
Yeah. And then everybody them boys up.
The Clippers, it's like, all right, you know, PG, Kawhi, like y'all not gonna get past them. Like every series has been like, man, there's no way the Phoenix Suns can get past them, and then we get past them, and it's just, you know, it's just proving the doubters wrong. That's all it's been all season long, and you know, just another opportunity to do it again.
Well, we're officially, I believe, we've officially been a Suns podcast since you beat the Nuggets. So you've converted the Jenkins and Jones podcast for sure. You mentioned kind of the team dynamic. I wanted to ask you about that. We've been joking, like, you guys feel more like a college team than an NBA team. Like the chemistry is so obvious on that team, with maybe Chris Paul being like the RA of the dorm or something. take us inside the locker room. Like, what is the dynamic like on that team? How close are you guys? And what's the difference between, you play for the Knicks and the Pistons? What's the difference? Like, how is it different having a team that's closer together this year?
No, I think you have, from our standpoint, we look at our whole team as like, I guess you're quote unquote young. Like they say, hey, our core is young. But the way we look at it from the old, like I'm an older guy on the team, and it's like, you look at this as an opportunity to help other guys get better. But then also too, they help us, like, you know, they help the guys that have been in the league for a few years now, like really get what we need to get. Like it's been fun. It's been a fun ride thus far. And it's, you know, it's a lot of joking, a lot of playing, you know, when you have a lot of younger guys, everybody's clowning each other, doing, you know, everything that you could think of that you know, keeps everybody, all the camaraderie, all the, you know, just the good times rolling. Like that's our team really. And, that's what makes us a really fun team when, you know, when you're around us and see how special it is.
Does Chris Paul join in with the joking? Because he definitely seems like a dude who steps in the locker room like, hey, cut all that noise out. He definitely seems like,
we're preparing for a finals, guys. Come on. Settle down now. It's past 10, you know what I mean?
Nah. CPA, like I said, everybody joins in. It's not just one, like, specific guy, nothing like that. It's everybody. Everybody's, you know, clowning on each other, and it just goes back and forth on a daily basis. So that's what keeps the locker room light. And, And you know, it's been fun because we're not built around a big three or anything like that. We're just a team that just come together throughout the year. And then, like, the culmination of everything is like, hey, look, we're here. We're at the finals, and hey, we're trying to win this thing.
What's the difference in the approach since, you know, compared to the teams prior? Because, like, the Kings, Pistons, Knicks, when you were playing for them,
bro.
You know what I mean? Like, this is a totally different experience right now. Like, what's the difference in the approach throughout the year, or just like game to game? You know what I mean?
I think the approach would probably be it's just like on a daily basis, and I give a lot of credit to Monty. It's like he's put it in our heads like, hey, look, we got to keep getting better, or like, hey, we were going like a 4 and 5 game winning streak, and say, hey, we got to keep getting better. Mm-hmm. Like we you know, we're good, but we're not great. Like, you know, we still have a lot of room to grow, and then it's like, our mentality too was, we're not gonna lose 2 in a row. We're not gonna lose 2 in a row. And it's like, that's, if you carry that mindset throughout a season, you look up and your records, you know, you have a really good record. So it's like, that's how you have to look at every single game. And I think that that's been the biggest difference between other teams that I've been on compared to this one. It's like, we might have lost 2 in a row maybe once, but I don't even think we did. Like, I mean, so it really has carried over, and that's how good we've been this year. That's how good we've been.
We've got some more questions about the Suns and the playoffs and everything, but I wanted to talk about your story a little bit. I mentioned before we hopped on, I'm a local sports writer, so I see what a big deal it is when a guy just makes it pro in Europe. You know what I mean? Like, coming from the inner city, like, I know those guys aren't seen by national media as a success, but I see how that could change a whole family's course and everything. You have one of the craziest stories I've seen you go from undrafted to back-to-back 10-day contracts with the Knicks and end up making the All-NBA rookie team. What was that? I want to know about the pressure of those 10-day contracts of like, man, I was the man in high school. I was the man in college. And now I'm like, I'm right here on the edge doing the D-League stuff. And then you get that opportunity. Like, what was that like for you? And kind of how crazy was that, like busting through and then getting to sign that contract after,
yeah, those, no, I mean, after those 10 days? You know, the first couple of games was definitely nerve-wracking just because I was like so amped up because I've reached my dream, but it's like, hey, I want to stay here. I don't want to go back to playing in the D League at the time. And
right. How many games is that?
That's a short window. Yeah. I think the 10-day ended up being like four or five games. Like that was it. That was four or five games. But it was weird because, you know, I think it was the first 10 days. 10 days was six games because I got there, it was a back to back. So we played the Wizards and we played the Houston Rockets on a back to back. So that helped me out because I had two games like bang bang, like and it got my jitters, it got everything out of there. So it's like first game, really nervous, scored a couple points, cool. All right, now the jitters are gone. Then I didn't even have a day of practice. I went right back into the next game. Like, all right, we gotta play. So next day, play Houston Rockets. I think it was a TNT game, and I didn't have no chance like to think of like, hey, look, the hypeness of the game or anything like that. I was just like, hey, look, I'm out here. Let me just try to hoop, and actually had a heck of a performance. So that was like, it kind of like relaxed me. You know, all my friends talking at home, man, don't get crossed up by
yes.
So that eased me. That eased me in. It just threw me in the ringer, and I just had, you know, I had to either survive or, you know, so that was a huge thing. And once I got past those two games, like everything else, like I had two vets in the locker room that were behind me. You know, I had Lou Almason and Lance Thomas, and they both were like in my ear, like they've been through situations like that with me, like the same situation that I was going through. And they were like, hey, look, don't worry about it. Don't get the big head. Like, just stay the course. Like, it's going to be day by day. Keep doing what you're doing and everything gonna work out. And it's so funny because they texted me the other day when we made the championship. He's like, man, I've been, you know, thinking you're gonna win one out the whole time, like knowing that from that point to now, like it's crazy how, you know, 7 years have gone by, but it's cool. That's to cool. You know, see that culmination.
Can I let me sneak one more in. What's that like at the end? So you're 10 days, which is, again, we just said it. It's a real short window. It's like your whole life, all the dreams up to that window. And then you signed, I believe, a 2-year deal after the second 10-day. So all of a sudden you go from, I'm trying to make it in, to, I don't know. I mean, I know a couple of dudes from Baton Rouge, and I know this contract you signed probably would go as far in Baton Rouge as it would go in Long Beach, where I'm from. Yeah. That's money, right? I mean, that's life-changing contract right there. Like, what was that moment? Like, you go from, I'm trying to make it, to they put the paper in front of you, and it's like, oh, shit,
yeah,
this is real.
I mean, really excited. Everybody in my, you know, and their mama was calling me, texting me like, yo, man, congrats, this and that. But at the same time too, it's like, I knew that, you know, if I wanted to make it in this league, I had to make a statement. And I think that was my mindset the whole time, getting that contract. But it's like, all right, you know, I've gotten here, but like, I don't want to go back. And you know, that's how fast the league is. It's like, you'll be in there for a minute, and guys are going to next. So it's like, all right, let me just keep going, keep chipping away. And then all of a sudden you look up and I make the all rookie team. And it's like, wow, like, you know, it's hard to come by, but you know, I made it that year. So it was just very, very, very fortunate, very blessed.
How do you even prepare for a 10-day? Like, you don't even know the sets yet. You know what I mean? Like how do you even prepare for that? You know, to be able to play when you haven't had a practice.
Yeah, I think that playing with the Knicks, like the organization, like the smaller unit, I understood what they were trying to do. So it wasn't like I was like thrown into something completely different, but it was like I knew similar sets, calls, defensive schemes, all that. So it made it an easier adjustment. I say easier. Mm-hmm. It wasn't easy, but it was an easier adjustment.
I have one important question. What did Chris Paul say to Pat Bev? What I heard what was said, but I don't know if I heard what was actually said. You feel me?
So let me like rephrase the whole question, because it wasn't that he said anything in that moment, right? When he pushed him and nothing like that. It was like the culmination of the series, right? So game five, like they were talking all cash, like trying to like just rile us up. Like it was just crazy, because he was like, oh, we about to come back. Just y'all ain't got it. Like it was just too much stuff. Like everybody, like, and it wasn't just him, it was everybody. Yeah. Like the Clippers in general, like they all just talk trash and just like it is what it is. But then game five came and they took it to a whole nother level where like we going back to LA, we gonna stomp y'all. This like it, you know, it was just a lot of other words said, but it just like that was how it went. And so when we got to game six, you can start seeing it pull away, and then we started talking, and they just, you know, they feel it like, all right, well, this is it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, our season's over. And then, you know, a couple shots here and there, and then dudes, like, looking at each other, hey, we just got the best of them. And they was just, you know, they were like little kids.
I love that.
Even for Pat Bev.
But I will say this. We're going to remember that for the rest of our life. Yeah. Our team and, like, every individual, like, not saying that we can go back and push nobody in the back or nothing like that, but we gonna remember that, like, you know what I mean? Like that's gonna stick with everybody on our team for the rest of our careers going forward, and you know how we look at people differently. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I love the game by game breakdown of how the Clippers fuck around and found out. Like basically that was the breakdown, right? But you know, going to game six, that closeout game where Chris Paul just put on a fucking performance of the ages, right? 41, ran off 14 of 16 points when the Clippers made it close, when they got to within eight. You know, it's kind of a running joke on Twitter that, you know, they give all the credit to Chris Paul, even when on shit that he didn't have his hands in. But, you know, for someone who's in that locker room, like, what would you say Chris Paul's impact is?
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. Cause you know that, sometimes it's like, it's the scoring. Sometimes it's the assist. Sometimes it's just him taking care of the ball for some games. It's like, you know what I mean? Like if you can take care of the ball, not turn it over, have a couple assists here and there, like that's huge. And that goes a long way. And it carries over to everybody else. And then also too, it's like the confidence builder. Like he's the culmination of like keeping everybody together, keeping the confidence like real high. Like, oh, we about to go out here. We about to, like, you know, it's just how we look at each and every game. So, I mean, hey, he's been steady year round, and I don't see it changing. You know, no time soon.
If you guys are able to win four more games this season, I think one of the defining moments and a play that will go down really in NBA history was the Valley Oop to win that game. What was that moment like? I mean, you're down one with that little time left. Yep. It's tough. You know, what's the bench thinking? You see the play get drawn up. And then what was that moment like when the ball went through and you realize, oh my God, that's like one of the craziest
things in playoff history. First, like everybody was kind of upset because they were like, is that goaltending? But then, you know, you had to think back real fast, you know, when you got to get your rule book out, like, oh no, you can do that. You can do that at the end of the game. That's just a rule that they.
Ayton said he didn't know either. He said he just trusted Monty on that one. So yeah.
Right. He was going to blame Monty if it was goaltending.
And it's like, what's crazy, because it almost could have went in from the angle that he shot it. It literally was going in the basket and just, luckily that DA touched it, it worked out, because that ball would have went in if he wouldn't have touched it. But yeah, that was a great play. And everybody says, oh man, we walked through that. Nah, we never walked through that play and nothing like that. But it was something that we had worked on. It was a fake alley oop, and then like somebody was coming off to the corner for a three. I think it was Book coming off for a three. That was the play. But DA just happened to whoever went to the corner, I forgot who went to the corner, but that ended up being the perfect setup, because Book's at the rear screen, and I mean, hey.
Right.
Book's at a real screen.
Yeah.
That was real. I mean, that was the unsung hero of that moment. So, I mean, because I think the underrated part of that play, we talked about it a lot on the pod, was We told everyone, go to any park near you, stand where Jay Crowder was standing, and try and throw that pass. No, you won't get it once in 100 times. So he didn't work on that. Like, that wasn't part of the plan. Hey, if we're in this situation, he just had that
put it right there. And that's what we kept looking at the clock. Like, all right, you know, it's 0.9 on the clock. Like, if you throw it by the rim, like, hey, if DA most of the times can out jump whoever is guarding them. So, hey, look, that we're going to trust in that. That'll be the ideal play. And especially to win that game like that without CP, like, especially the first two games, like, that's huge. That was huge.
What has seeing CP play meant for you? Like, what have you taken personally from, like, watching him do what he's doing at this age? You know what I mean? It's pretty insane for us. Like, but as a point guard in the league, what does it mean for you?
No, it's huge. It's huge because I have a lot of stuff to work on this summer. And you know, throughout this year, it's like I've been working on stuff while he's been, you know, doing this thing and whatnot. But from afar, like, okay, I need to work on that. Like, you know, just mental check notes for me going forward. Like, all right, you know, put this in my notepad. Put that in my notepad. Okay, all right, I need to work on that. Okay, all right. Picking his brain, trying to figure out things that he looks at or sees. Like, we sitting right next to each other on the bench. So I'm always like asking him, hey, what do you see out there? What do you think we could be doing better? And, you know, his vocal is crazy because he's able to communicate with the guys. Like, hey, look, this is what I'm seeing out there. Or, hey, look, we need to pull this together. You know, so it's always something that is really important for us going forward. So I'm always trying to see, hey, how can I learn?
I wanted to ask you about, the playoffs are a different animal. And this is obviously your first, you know, kind of deep run of this kind that you've been a part of. But you're having individually, your shooting percentages are up. You're having your best three-point shooting year. You know, you can obviously see that's something you worked on. But in the playoffs, the minutes tighten up. So you go from rotation player contributing, scoring every game to those minutes are harder to come by, obviously, the deeper you get in the playoffs. Is that difficult on an individual level, or is the team success so kind of invigorating that, you know what I mean, that you stay locked in? Like, I would just imagine that practicing, knowing every game plan, like, week after week, when you're not getting in there for 20 minutes, is harder. Like, what's that experience been like for you just on an individual level?
Yeah, no, it's been tough. I won't say it's been easy because, you know, as a competitor, you want to be out there playing. And especially the year that I was having, like, you know, I was playing through a stretch and was, you know, averaging, you know, 10 points a game, shooting 45 on a clip. So I was almost like, if I look at my stats for the year, like I was at a point where I was 50-40-90, but I was shooting 50-50-100 for most of the year. Then I missed one at the end, but it's crazy because, you know, as a competitor, I'm going to root my team on, and I'm never going to have my pride in a way that's going to take me out of a situation or, you know, whatever's next. Maybe this might be a situation where I need to learn from, you know, going forward in my career. And then when my turn comes, my opportunity comes, you know, I make the most of it. So that's how I look at everything in my career. It's like, it's an opportunity for me to learn from it and just continue to prove my, you know, it's a lot of doubters right there right now, like that are looking at, oh man, this guy's riding the bench, this and that. But it's like, you know, it's good. It's motivation for me going forward in the summertime, knowing that, okay, when I get my opportunity, hey, I don't want to hit none of that. So that's all I look forward to.
Well, you just said, I mean, there's usually space anywhere for a dude who's shooting 50-50-90, you know, 50-50-99.
Right. It's
like, you mentioned it a little bit at the beginning, but I wanted to really ask you about this. What's the confidence level like for you guys? I mean, is it just straight up like we are about to go win the championship? Like, it just seems like everyone has that feeling right now.
Yeah, no, that's it. That's all we have had on our mind. I think, like I said, we had the Lakers series and we won that series. Our confidence went up like, you know, 1,000. And then now looking back, like when we were in the Denver series, we were talking about this moment, like, hey, look, we got past the hardest team out there because, you know, going through LeBron, going through the defending champs, like that's the hardest team you got to play against right there. And going through them, we just felt like, all right, there's nobody else here that can stop us. So we feel like, hey, look, these four more, like, you know, even though it's going to be a battle every single night and it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a lot of just blood, sweat, and tears involved in this, we feel like, hey, we're going to win this all. We're going to win
it all. Going back to, you know, you mentioning kind of, you know, adjusting from the regular season to the playoffs. I remember Steve Kerr said something very interesting in The Last Dance that I'd never really considered in all my years of being a basketball fan. He was like, you know, of course the pressure is always on the stars in the playoffs. He said, but rotation guys, we get 4 or 5 shots a game. And those 4 or 5 shots a game become way bigger in the finals than like a midseason game versus the Hornets. You know what I mean? So that's something that I never considered. But like, you know, I know you're definitely ready for that challenge. But have you guys like done any type of scouting so far on the Bucks? Have y'all been in the film room on them yet? Or
oh yeah. No, we're already locked in. Once we knew that. Well, we had a couple of days where we had one day in between knowing that hey, we finished our series, we can watch clips on us, take care of like, hey, what we need to take care of going forward. Then we had a day where, all right, let's get ready, prepare, knowing that they're about to play tonight. Whoever we play, Atlanta, Milwaukee, we're going to scout both of them. Watch their game. Okay, we got Milwaukee. Come in the next day. All right, let's lock in on us. But also, too, we know what we need to do for Milwaukee. And in the day, we got another day where we'll be able to, you know, be at the gym and just take the small bits and pieces knowing how they're going to play. But this first game is going to be a filling out anyway, so it doesn't even matter how, you know, you come into a game and adjust and this and that. You just got to come into the first game knowing that, hey, look, both teams are going to come out swinging, trying to see who can get the upper ground. And then from then on, it's like, all right, then we're adjusting from then on out.
Well, we are a Suns podcast. We will be rooting you guys on for sure. We appreciate you taking the time. I know you probably need to go prep for the freaking NBA finals, but thank you. Thanks for hanging out with us, man, and best of luck to you guys the rest of the way.
Thank you. Appreciate y'all. Y'all have a good one.
Our thanks to Langston for joining us. I can't fucking admit. Before you guys got on, he was talking about he's up because he's got like a 3-year-old and a relative newborn, so he's just up early. I think that's so funny that it's like you're getting ready for the NBA finals, but you still have it's still your life. Like it's still Monday. Your kids got to get up and go to camp or whatever it is. Like, I don't know why, but that really I was really cracking up at that shit.
We all have certain things in common. You feel me? It's wild. That's wild.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Let's talk about before we get to Rachel Nichols gate. Let's talk about Sha'Carri Richardson. And we just talked about this shit with Alex Caruso, bro. Like, weed, the devil's lettuce is still...
The wacky tobacco.
Jazz cigarettes are still upending fucking athletic careers for no reason whatsoever. How do you guys feel about this shit with Sha'Carri?
How insane is this, though? Like, she's the biggest star. Is there somebody in the Olympics you're more excited to see compete? And Sha'Carri,
it's Simone Biles. Her and Simone Biles, and that's it.
Yeah, I mean that's it. You know, what I mean, but we're talking about her with Simone Biles. You feel me? Right. Literal fucking goat. Okay, and you're weed in a she's smoking it in a place that is legal. Like, come on, like that's not. She didn't make the mistake. The rule is the mistake. You know what I mean? Like that is insane to me. Like that we're still dealing with this now. When motherfuckers are making so much fucking money off this shit, they don't have like liquor on the fucking. Is it wrong to drink alcohol? Like that's the equivalent of this.
I think that I read, and I'm a track guy, but I stay as far away from any article with USADA in it as I fucking can. Mm-hmm. When she tested positive, they're not allowed to smoke weed.
Mm-hmm.
They're not allowed to have it pop up as like, you smoked weed before you competed. And I think that there is a similar provision with alcohol that like mm-hmm. you're basically not allowed to be intoxicated while you compete. Now,
mm-hmm.
why that's the case, especially for weed, I don't know what the value of that is. Mm-hmm. We have hundreds of NFL and NBA and everyone, you know, players from other sports saying, yeah, that was how I was dealing with anxiety when I was going out and competing, whatever. Like, I don't know why that would disqualify her, but I do think like that is what she tested for. And I mm-hmm. do want to note that they're not like anti-weed. There's plenty of people who are smoking. And a friend of mine who was an Olympian said, you smoked the night before. You just can't smoke, you know, and have it pop up as like, oh, it's in the system at the moment. You know what I mean?
Wait, so what's the difference? If you smoke the night before, it's going to pop up. You know what I mean? Like,
It's like a certain amount or something. I don't get into the fucking drug testing specifics on the shit.
Yeah, what I know
is they're not testing people to make sure that they're not, like, it's not like a job check. They're not seeing if there's anything in your system. It's like specifically a day of rate change, which is why whoever tweeted this shit about people are gonna get high and throw the javelin into the crowd, like,
that was fucking weirdo. Was
rightfully getting killed, but that is basically what they're testing for, is whether you are on the field with alcohol or drugs in your system.
Yeah. Weed is on the painkiller list, and you know, THC is a painkiller, but it's not a painkiller enough to where you can fucking like power through a sore hammy or some shit if you're a track star. You know what I mean? Weed doesn't kill pain that much, but
the painkiller shit, I think it's more in there for, because it's the same rule for the whole sport. So I think it's more in there for the marathoners of people running 50Ks and shit like that, that it's like, you're not dulling your system to go out and do stuff. I don't agree with the rule or whatever. Obviously, any rule that results in your biggest star not competing at the Olympics was a bad rule, right? You know what I mean? Like, you start at that point. But that was the only point that I would make about it, is I don't think that they give a fuck whether the hammer thrower is smoking weed to celebrate becoming an Olympian or not. I think it's just she happened to, and that's why when you saw her come out, what she tweeted before the news went public was, I'm human. Like, she felt like she had fucked up by doing it so close to when she was competing or whatever, that it got popped. Because from what I know from Olympic track people, it's very well known how to be a regular smoker, whatever you want to do, and not have it fuck your race day test up.
If she fucking did that high off the Zah, she's my favorite person on the motherfucking planet, nigga. If she got that Zaza in her system, smoking these motherfuckers, because her start wasn't the best. Her finish was great. So she might have had a few, like, delayed reaction, you know what I mean? And smoke the motherfuckers like that, you feel me? Come on, G. Hey, put the cape on her. She's a superhero. I think this shit is fucking ridiculous, though. It's just, fuck all the dumb shit, bro. Like, she should be running. She should be running. She did not gain anything from smoking fucking weed. She had no, the advantage she had was her fucking hard work and being blessed by fucking God. You know what I mean? And that's not illegal. So fuck this shit. Point fucking blank. You feel me? I'm not even talking to the mic because the mic doesn't work. I'm like, point fucking blank. The mic's like, bitch, I ain't even on, nigga. What the fuck is that? I don't even work, nigga.
Tyler, are you going on a weed strike in support of Shakira?
I am. I think the correct way to approach this is to actually increase our smoking of weed in her support. That is the route that I will be taking. Every joint I light up is for Shakira this summer.
I want to tell you something. Adrian is still like trying to find that strain of weed you had when we was in D.C. He was talking about that shit, man, that weed that Tyler had, woo. Dude, that was over a year ago, bro. That's close to a year and a half. This motherfucker still talking about that strain you had. You feel me? Like, nigga.
I keep that gas. That's the case.
Hey, text that man to tell him, because he over here thirsty as fuck, nigga. You know what I'm saying? This motherfucker like, this is a year and a half later. Boy, well, he was smoking back in D.C. Nigga. We talking about barbecue, nigga. Like, all of a sudden, you bring this nigga up again. Boy, you was smoking that good, you feel me? You know what I mean? That medical grade. Sheesh. That motherfucker. Woo. But I remember Darren straight up saying, you all right, Darren? Darren was like, I can't feel my face. I'm like, Tyler really got rapper weed. I've never heard anybody say that off, you know what I mean? Off a song. Like, not, you know, that shit was funny as hell. But anyway, let's move on.
Tyler, I was cracking up so hard last night. I was off Twitter on the 4th for, cause it was Vinny's birthday. I popped on at like 10 PM. I mentioned to you guys, like 30 people texting me about Rachel Nichols for, I did not know why the fuck at the moment, but I saw Tyler got like 5,000 retweets off of not even posting a word, but it was just someone had tweeted, we're not smoking weed all summer and some, until they let Shakira run. Tyler just posted the, ooh.
Yeah, like, let's not go that far, my nigga.
Let's not take it that far.
Good luck, you know what I mean? But not I. You feel me?
Someone said, someone quoted Tyler and said, like, we're not the athletes, we're the supporters.
Right, 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 right.
Exactly.
Oh, shit. Okay, let's talk about the story that gripped Twitter on the 4th of July. Rachel Nichols Gate, New York Times story came out, and I just caught up on this shit. So let me preface this, which I always think is important in these conversations, say we don't know any of these motherfucking people. Mm-hmm. I don't know any of the people. Like, I don't know who they are. I will say that I'm never surprised when I find out that a white person was talking out of both sides of their mouth about diversity. And mm-hmm. that is something that I believe all three of us agree firmly on. Yeah. But what did you guys think of this story? I'm going to not try and catch everyone up on a 2000 word in-depth story by the New York Times. But I would say that I would just foreground the conversation by saying all I know about it is what was in the story, and that's it, because I don't know these people and I don't know any of the other shit. But what was your reaction to this story, Tyler?
Yeah, so Cliff Notes version, Rachel Nichols was speaking with LeBron's publicist, I believe.
Yeah.
I think it says LeBron's publicist, about
Adam Mendelsohn.
Yeah, and about how, you know, Maria Taylor was getting the push and how they wanted Maria Taylor to do, you know, sideline NBA reporting, which is Rachel Nichols' gig. And then Rachel Nichols went on the whole, you know, I understand that this conversation happened last summer. We all remember how last summer was, mm-hmm. you know, after the George Floyd and Breonna Taylor tragedies there. But, you know, basically Rachel Nichols implied that they were, you know, pushing Maria Taylor because she was Black. And it threw us for a loop because Rachel Nichols has always seemed publicly to be on the side of diversity and inclusion, right? And it seems like so many people are on the side of diversity and inclusion until you have to give something up personally, until you have to make a way for someone, right? And for Rachel Nichols to imply that Maria Taylor, who was, you know, a college basketball athlete, who got her start in journalism as a college athlete, you know, who has worked her way up to the top, and you are Diane Sawyer's niece, right? And we're talking, right? And you got the nerve to act like people are pushing Maria Taylor on us because she didn't work her way to this. And you are fucking Diane Sawyer's niece. Like, what are we doing here, man?
Does anything else need to be said, nigga? Does anything else need to be said, Tyler? Bro, I think you just summed this shit up.
I have one other thing to say, which is I'll say this. I always start at the very top on any of this shit, because I will say, and I'm not saying this in defense of Rachel Nichols, I think she's probably absolutely right when she said it's a fucking they're making it woman on woman.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that is outside of the control of Maria Taylor or Rachel Nichols. That, hey, first of all, ESPN's basketball coverage fucking sucks. So if you have a Maria Taylor and a Rachel Nichols, why are you making the two of them feel like they're competing for the woman spot? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's something that I think Rachel Nichols referenced that I think is probably very true. And that's a shitty thing about
social media. But what she said was some fuck shit.
What she said was some mega fuck shit. Okay, and I'm not saying in defense of Rachel Nichols. She's commenting on a situation that it actually doesn't need to be that someone needs to make a way for diversity. They could just hire the best people. Maria Taylor, with all due respect to Rachel Nichols, is the best person that they have for that fucking job. So that's the end all be all of why she should have it. But like, you're making women feel like we have one spot for a woman for who? For whose opinion that we needed to hear on ESPN on their garbage ass fucking basketball coverage, bro.
Who, Park? That's who we squall was in there. Yeah. I just think it's interesting that it was said like in the like last year. Like, she probably just dropped the fucking Black Box. You know what I mean? I mean, like 2 minutes ago, and then leans and she, you know, she was, I think, in the bubble when she said the shit. It was at its peak. You know, white people were whiting less at that moment. And she's on the phone full whiting. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, come on now. Like, no, man. Like what you said, Mike, and you had to say that shit. You know, never surprised you're talking about both ends of the mouth. But, I mean, like you said, Rachel, I was low-key surprised. I was surprised. You know what I mean? But
you're surprised just because she – I mean, I think Tyler said she's appeared to publicly – she's more than appeared to. She's – that's been sort of her brand, is like, I'm pro diversity and pro new voices. And she had people who she's helped get on the Jump or whatever, sticking up for her in that regard, saying, hey, she helped get me on this show or whatever. But that's why you're saying you're surprised, because she's,
yeah, that's why I was surprised. Presented
herself that way.
Yeah. I mean, with certain people, I'm not like, I don't care how you present yourself. But with her, I definitely was, you know what I mean? But yeah, it's an unfortunate situation, but I think Tyler summed the shit up perfectly. You feel me?
Right. As Tyler tends to do.
Yeah. Mike is like, dog, you the biggest Tyler fan, dog. Like,
I appreciate y'all, man.
That's my guy.
One and two, you know what I mean? We right. As Tyler said.
Anyway, ESPN, fuck you, Rachel Nichols, give me a fucking break. Like, but it is interesting. Here's the other thing we'll say. The only person who's faced any consequences for this is Kayla Johnson,
a black woman,
yeah,
who is a black female producer at ESPN, who admitted to sharing the clip with Maria Taylor and was suspended. And that's the only person who's had any kind of punishment whatsoever. And I would add, by the way, Rachel Nichols recorded herself saying this shit and uploaded it to the ESPN server accidentally, which is not a good time to be arguing that the younger talent shouldn't be getting bigger opportunities when you're struggling to use the new tech. Maria Taylor went to school to know how to do the shit that young people have to do with technology now.
How do y'all feel about what Mendelsohn said?
Just going back to, you know, springboarding off what Mike said about how you never really know with white people in these issues. Like, you know, of course, with any type of Bron, you know, linked to any story, there's going to be a crowd blaming Bron for this. And we saw people, Bron needs to vet his people better, bro. We, as black people, we know that white people, you think there's no telling. When white people get away from us, a lot of them take off the mask here. And I'm never going to blame a black person because a white person took down their facade in private. Absolutely not. Never.
I mean, how does Bron in any way control what anybody says, black, white, green, whatever the fuck, outside? You know what I mean? Like, at any moment, you know what I mean? But yeah, like you said, like, even in, like, I went and played a country club of golf, you know what I mean? I knew I was in enemy territory, you feel me? So, like, not just behind your back. I'm worried, like, am I going to have to say some shit? Like, you know what I mean? So, like, even in front, like, we have to, like, it's uncomfortable at times, you know what I mean? But behind his back, like, I don't know what Bron is supposed to do. Maybe not fuck with him no more after this shit.
You got
to
give him the boot.
He got to boot that motherfucker. They're like, you know what I'm saying? Between Black Lives Matter and Me Too, you know, I'm exhausted. Bitch! What about the nigga with a black life or the woman, the actual woman, like, that is dealing with the fuck shit? I'm exhausted?
He said, I'm so tired of considering women and black people to
people, right?
Like, simultaneously. Just, right. Like, in one
I
summer.
I was tired of caring about people. Like,
right. Empathy sucks. You know what I mean? Like, dog, like, get the fuck out of here, bro. Like, He got to give him the Buddha-Rooski after that for sure. You feel
he's
me?
He's got to go.
Yeah.
He's got to go.
You guys are two of the only people I've seen publicly express what basically every black person I know expresses privately, which is the table stakes are that white people are all racist to some extent. Like, you know what I mean? Like, to some level, like, there's no surprise when that happens. So, like, I don't think Bron thought Adam Mendelsohn had the perspective of a black person in America. No. And it doesn't invalidate the work that he did with voter registration drives in his school and everything, because it's like, if you're going to ask black people to find perfect white people to help them advance black causes, good fucking luck, bro. I mean, you know, like, who's he going to hire? Like, how do you vet that? You should, like, it's exactly what Tyler said, like, which there we go again. But it's like, yeah, you almost assume, right? You both almost assume that, like, Bron's publicist Adam Mendelsohn would be different on a call with Rachel Nichols than he would be with Maverick Carter.
No doubt. So,
but that
you
was
just hope they don't prove you right. That's right. You know what I mean? Like, that's how you approach these situations. Like, please don't prove me right. It's not, does, you know, it happens more than you like it to happen.
Yeah.
It's remarkable that the black squares on Instagram didn't solve anything. My mom says something to me last summer that I thought was perfect. She said, well, if all these people really feel this way, I guess we'll actually get some shit changed. Right?
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to post it on Instagram, post the black square on Instagram, mm-hmm.
right,
than
right.
it is to say, than it is for Rachel Nichols to go to ESPN and say, it's in my contract that I'm on this show. Put her on the fucking show too.
Right.
If and we're the two best people and you want us both to be on, then put both of us on the fucking show. Like, she could have taken that stand instead of the stand that was just about her career.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, like, they didn't even listen to Maria when they asked her, hey, you know, I would prefer not to work with a person who doesn't think I'm qualified to have this fucking job, even though I worked fucking hard. And they still try to squeeze her ass in that motherfucker. You know what I mean? Like, they haven't even respected her wishes when she's the fucking, you know, victim in this situation. You know what I mean? Like, dog, it's the way they're dealing with it is absolute fucking bullshit. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, the producer, what was her name?
Kayla Johnson.
Kayla Johnson. You know what I mean? She ended up leaving because they were giving her like less than desirable jobs after that. You know what I mean? They're trying to get her out of there.
She got the freeze out.
Right. I mean, it's like, bro, I love how she, yeah, I did it. Yeah, I did it. You know what I mean? I mean, motherfucker, come on, man. But like, whole situation is fucked up.
This is the issue with corporate media and corporate structure in general. And I know Tyler, I thought had some really great points about HR and the purpose of HR, but there's basically two ways you can live. You can live like Kayla Johnson by your own actual moral ethical code, and then not bother to lie or cover shit up. Say, hell yeah. So someone says some fuck shit about her and uploaded it to our server that I'm on. Hell yeah, I told her someone said this shit about you and I showed it to you. Or you could build your brand around diversity and go out there and talk out of both sides of your mouth. And this situation is a great example of which one serves your career better. You could be Rachel Nichols, or you could be a producer who was the only person to get punished and who then got frozen out and quit. Like, that's the way that this corporate structure, not just in media, but I feel like in any large corporation, that's the way it's incentivized. Like, it's incentivized for you to bullshit.
What did she do wrong, though? For her to get suspended, information that is available to Rachel Nichols or Maria Taylor, you know what I mean? Like, that information is...
She was on the producer's server, so she took something off the server to show it to Maria Taylor.
I know, but...
I don't have
access to that, though, right?
Maria Taylor had access to it, but I don't, I mean, probably, I don't see.
Yeah. There's the technicality shit that can always get you. They probably fried her for giving access to Maria Taylor for something that she shouldn't have had access to, which is bullshit. But yeah, that's how they do. And like I said, in my tweets, don't ever think HR is on your side in any type of these situations. Like there was a tweet saying, this is why I don't go to HR. No, I implore you, go to HR with any and everything, because you want that timeline established, you want that paper trail established. Email them about everything. If you have in-person meetings, make sure you get a follow-up email, you know, that you send out to them detailing what will happen in those in-person meetings. Get that paper trail going, get that timeline going. Make sure you CC your personal email in all of these emails too. BCC yourself if you feel the need to do that, but always go to HR with anything, even though the HR is futile and you know that they're on the company side and they're not really going to take any significant action on the employee's part of most of these situations, but go to HR with any and everything. Don't let this deter you because HR didn't take action here. HR rarely takes action, but like I said, just get that timeline and paper trail going in case you got to take their ass to court one day.
Your point was basically HR is not on your side, but that's the agency. That's the part of your corporation you work for that will not delete the emails about what was happening.
Exactly. Correctamundo.
Hey, this whole system is fucking dumb. Like, listen, like, going to the people you think are supposed to help you, you know they're not going to fucking help you, but you need them to create a timeline.
Yeah. You need the documentation of them not helping you.
Like, that is the most roundabout way to getting assistance that you could possibly fucking create on the fucking planet. You know what I mean? Like, it's sickening.
Jobs are fucking scams, bro.
Oh my God. We really created this. We had so many ways to exist. I would rather be out here boxing a fucking lion and living the fucking 33 and be out this bitch than be sitting in the office, you know what I'm saying? Surrounded by motherfuckers that don't really fuck with me, that I don't fuck with, you know what I mean? And if I need help, going to people that don't really want to help me, it's all bullshit. All of it.
All of it.
That's why whenever we talk about astrophysics or whatever on this show, like that, this is the stupid human shit that I'm thinking about. Like the earth, like people, like you saw the Gulf of Mexico caught on fire over the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And everyone was like, oh, we're killing the earth. It's such a, the earth is not going to fucking notice when we go extinct, bro. The earth will be killing us. Like the earth at one point was covered in a mile and a half of lava across its entire surface. Like we are here for a blink. And the earth will not notice when we die. The house you're sitting in right now will be deconstructed within 30 years of humanity dying.
Yeah, Earth is not dying. Earth is adjusting to kill us. That's what the planet is doing. Earth is not dying at all. They are evolving to get us the fuck out of here. Yeah.
That's exactly right. It's not going to hurt. It's not ultimately going to hurt the earth. I mean, it'll hurt some other species when the temperature goes up and the water comes up, but it's not, the earth is still going to be here, bro. The earth's not going to blow up because the temperature went up 2 degrees. Humanity, the power grid's going to blow up. Like,
Earth got like another 300 billion years on this timeline, buddy. Yeah. It's going to be Gucci.
But we have this.
We might have 100. We'll see. You feel me?
We have this technology and knowledge and whatever and this opportunity. And like, this is the world we built. Like, this is, you know what I mean?
That's what trips me out all the time. I'm driving around. I mean, I'll say this. Flying at night is the one time where I look over the planet. And I'm like, damn, I could see, if you see the world from this, you know, point of view, this is kind of hard, you know what I mean? But the actual existing within what we've created, all these systems that surround us, is fucking trash. We are not good at it. It's not enjoyable. It doesn't halfway work. You know what I mean? I mean, at least not for me as a nigga. You know what I'm saying? in this experiment that we created. You
but again,
me?
From the perspective of the jet, because you have more melanin than me, yeah. Your mortgage rate is going to be 1.5% higher, and it's going to try and actively keep your family from owning a house. What? How does that make any fucking sense?
Bro, it's
like that, nothing today makes sense unless you explain the whole history of a country or humanity. You know what I mean? You have to like,
this, though.
Without the previously on, if you were to just show up for this episode of today on planet Earth, none of this
change the channel. I would change the channel ASAP. But Mike, you were like, as a white male, you ran about that shit at like 24. You know what I mean? Or 26, whatever you like. I don't want to fucking work in this fucking system. Fuck this shit. It doesn't work for anybody. Nobody truly likes it. And we still consistently deal with this, bro. Like, what the fuck? Nigga, you know what I mean? Like, people are trying to go back into the office. Bitch, do you like what? You want to shower at 6:30 and fight traffic to get back in that bitch?
Wait, wasn't there a study? Didn't Pew do a study of like who wants to go back into the office? And it was like no one wants to go into the office, but like 6% of Black people wanted to go back into the office. Yeah, it was just like, no.
That ain't our type of party, man. Not like it in the office. Like, who the fuck wants to go? It's who wants to go back to being the only Black face or one of the two?
Right,
bro.
Working with like Kevin on stage, bro. Like when we were saying nigga in the office, I was like, this is Narnia. You're saying nigga in meetings. I'm in a meeting. I'm like, nigga, fuck out of here. Nigga, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that, bro. I'm like, does this exist? You feel me? Like, crazy, crazy. But yeah, for the most part, though, when you leave that type of space, it's not built for us. Now, I'm not trying to go in that motherfucker. You know what I mean? For why? I'm at home. I created this space for myself, and I'm supposed to want to leave this to sit in a fucking cubicle because I have a standing desk. That's what's supposed to get me in that bitch. And some fucking chocolate-covered almonds. Well, thank you. I missed the fucking almonds, bitch. I hope you pay me enough. I'll go to fucking Trader Joe's and grab me some of the bitches. Weird-ass niggas. Can't believe a nigga want to be going back to this bullshit. Earth tried to give us an opportunity to see how we fucked up, and we're blowing that bitch. The basic shit. Going back to work, we're blowing that weak ass. We see we can work from home and the world is fine. And you want to take your ass in office? Nigga, what the fuck? Oh, nigga, fuck humans, bro. We're crazy as shit.
People can't wait to get back into the lunch meeting with Rachel.
Right! Bro, I'm hiding all the time. You know what I mean? You want to make me hide in the again? I gotta go back to... Nigga! Oh, man. You're at home. Anyway.
I have to do, speaking of things being broken and not working, I do have to end the show by naming the Booger Boy of the Week is Mike Gardabasio.
No.
This is a shocking development.
So as a brief history for people who picked us up with the volume, we used to have a podcast that we did on Patreon. And we had several hundred people, like 1,000 people sign up on the Patreon. They were paying some money for podcasts every month. When we signed with the volume, obviously we're going to the volume. All the shows are free. We were really excited about that. People not having to pay for it, et cetera, and us still being able to be paid for it. But we had a bunch of podcasts up on Patreon, many of which we felt were pretty good and people liked. So we didn't want to delete the Patreon and delete all that content. So what we told people was, we're just going to pause the billing every month so that you don't get charged for it. But if you had signed up, you could still listen to all the podcasts, whatever. Because there's a lot of non-time sensitive shit on there. I forgot to pause the billing for July, which meant that on July 1st, I woke up and had a fucking heart attack because I saw we had charged all of our Patreons.
Our favorite followers too. Like, these people like supported us,
fucking with
us, their like, own real. Pocket from their own pocket. Just like, come on, dog.
I am individually. There's no refund all option on Patreon. So I am my Booger Boy of the Week is I am individually looking up every single subscriber to hit refund for the money, and I will never forget to pause the billing again. And we will probably delete the shit because I'm just going to be too stressed the fuck out about it. but I did already pause the August billing. So if you're on there, anyway, that's why I'm the Booger Boy of the Week. Thank you to everyone. Everyone's been so nice. It's been making me sick to my stomach.
So nice, which doesn't make it better. Like you said, doesn't make it better.
It makes me feel worse about it.
Everybody's so, some people like keep it. I'm like, I don't want this. It's dirty money. Take your money back, please.
Someone told me donate it because the 562, my day gig, we're doing a fundraiser. We're a nonprofit. Someone said donate my money to the 562, and I was like, shoot me in the face.
Did you already did you cry? How did you not?
Yeah, I was just like, oh my god, I took $5 out of your wallet for no reason, and you're like, give it to your charity.
We really got some good folks who fuck
with us. We got some good solid people. Like, the people that fuck with us make me feel like we're good people, you know what I mean? Like, I think like the people that surround you can kind of tell you the type of person you are, you know what I mean? But like, if we have people like that that are fucking with us, we're doing some cool shit. That's solid. That's reassuring. You feel me?
That's our
show.
Take
your money back. Get your refund.
I just decided to just go through and do it all rather than taking the request from people. I'll just do it all. It's just going to take me 2 fucking days. But that's my bad. Thank you to everyone for being patient and so nice about it for sure. That's our show for the day. We'll be back on Thursday talking about Game 1 and then previewing Game 2 of the finals. As well as some other stuff that John will actually be interested in talking about. Watch Loki. God. We're going to talk about Loki on next Monday's show. So make sure you're caught up for that when the new one drops on Wednesday. And subscribe, 5 stars, youtube.com/thevolume. Bye.